Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Okay, picture this. It's a snowy February evening, kind of like what'll happen tonight. You're in your bed, you're all cozy, but you can't sleep. Does it sound familiar? If you find yourself up in the middle of the night doom scrolling, you are not alone. Sleepless nights have become the norm for so many people. So much so, the last time we talked about this topic, our phone lines were jammed. So we are revisiting it with Dr. Christopher Winter. Dr. Winter has been involved in sleep research and medicine for 25 years. He's the author of The Sleep Solution, Why Your Sleep is Broken and How to Fix It. His second book, Why Your Tired, Wired, or Irritable Child May Have a Sleep Disorder, is set to be released on August 17th of this year. Welcome back to the show, Chris.
Thank you so much. I was wondering where you were going with that, Allison, that you're in bed and can't sleep and look over and there's this middle-aged sleep doctor sitting next to you. So I'm glad it didn't go that way because I don't think that would help people sleep as much as I might like to think it would. So thank you for having me back. I really enjoyed the last time we were able to talk.
So we're in a whole different season that we're talking to you now. I'm curious, are there different sleep patterns for different seasons?
I think there are, whether we kind of like to admit it or not. It probably depends on where you live. I think if you live in Fairbanks, Alaska, I can promise you that there are different sleep schedules for different seasons because a lot of our sleep is reliant upon light. Mm-hmm. So if we live in a place where there's lots of light during the day and beautiful sunsets, and we live in homes that have relatively sleep promoting light inside of them, that's a real positive. If we live in places that are always kind of gray or dark, or you happen to live in a latitude that that it's dark a lot of the day or it gets dark early, that makes it very difficult for our brain to sort of engage in typical wakefulness, which makes sleep to be somewhat more of a challenge.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. Give us a call now with your sleep-related questions. What bad nighttime habits are you trying to break? Do you have any personal tips that help you fall asleep? Maybe you have a question for Dr. Winter. Our number is 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280, or you can tweet to us at @allofitwnyc. I'm interested in something. You are running a course, I think it's Friday at 1, called What is Sleep Better, Feel Better, Achieve More? How do you teach people to sleep?
Oh, we're going to find out, aren't we? I would be lying to you if I said I didn't have the same question. So, you know, it's interesting. It's been fun. I was asked by this group to do the talk, and you can find more information on my Twitter page. It's at sportssleepdoc.com. Or I'm sure on your page, we can send it if you're interested. Mm-hmm. But I really tried to break it down into almost like a workbook. For instance, you know, if you look at the definition of insomnia, it's really not a person who can't sleep. It's a two-part definition. It's a person who's not satisfied with the timing or the quality of their sleep. So that's part one, meaning that you go to bed, it takes you 2 hours to fall asleep, and you don't like it. So that's part one. Number two is you have to have a negative emotional response to number one. So if I meet somebody at a dinner party and they tell me it takes them 2 hours to fall asleep or they wake up for 2 hours in the middle of the night, my first question is always, well, how do you feel about that? And if the answer is, oh, I don't mind, or I love it, I love being awake in bed at night, then they're never really going to have insomnia because that hatred, loathing, frustration has to be there to kind of make it work. So, you know, in the course, we're going to talk about, you know, number one, you're going to bed, it takes you 2 hours to fall asleep. Why have you chosen 9 o'clock as your bedtime if it always takes you 2 hours to fall asleep? Perhaps there's a mechanistic problem with your sleep that you were taught that you need 9 or 10 hours of sleep, but genetically what you inherited from mom or dad actually has you needing 6.5 hours of sleep. So just by virtue of you trying to get 9 hours when you in fact need 6.5, you already meet the first criteria for insomnia. It's kind of like I've got a football player and he eats an entire extra large pizza for dinner every night and he seems very healthy. So I think that I will do the same thing. I am not a football player. I'm about 5'8" when I first wake up, and gravity hasn't worked on me. And there's no way in the world I would be able to eat an entire extra large pizza for dinner tonight. So when I call my doctor and tell him I'm having a lot of appetite trouble, I can never finish my dinner, instead of giving me an appetite stimulant, the intelligent doctor should say, well, Chris, what does your dinner consist of? And when I say, oh, it's an entire extra large pizza, my doctor should say, you know, I don't think that's really appropriate for somebody your size and your ability level or your activity level. So there's a lot of really interesting things that go into what we call, quote unquote, good sleep that I'm going to try to break down step by step over 2 hours. So when you walk away from the course, it's not just a bunch of theories about sleep and dark and light and quiet and cold, but really things you can practically do to understand your sleep more and hopefully fix it.
And along those lines, in a recent interview, you said we've lost a lot of the anchors of our sleep in 2020. It's even more important now for people to refocus on things they can control, back to the why of the sleep. What are some things, some ways people can retake control when it comes to sleep?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great question, Allison. I think it's retaking control of your life. And, you know, a lot of the things that we complain about in our day-to-day lives, or maybe an individual, an adult would complain about during their work lives that they can't wait to let go of when they retire, are actually secretly helping us be better sleepers at night. And I always think of the military, you know, the military career service person. She served our country for 30 years in the Navy, and God bless her. That's great. And she's thinking, you know what, but I cannot wait to retire, because I want to sleep in. I don't want to get up at 5:30 in the morning and do whatever I need to do. And when the retirement comes, you know, a couple of years later, they're in my office saying, I just really can't sleep very well. And a lot of times it's the removal of that set wake up time. It's the removal of that morning process of getting up, having a cup of coffee, reading the paper, taking the subway into work, or having a 45-minute commute in traffic, which you think of as being really negative. But that consistent commute, that consistent exercise class that you do right after your work is over, that consistent lunchtime that everybody takes in your office at noon, you all go get food together and sit in the break room and talk, we've lost that. So it's going to be really interesting when we teach this class Friday. It's from 1 to 3. How many people are in their pajamas in bed? Like, I'm wondering if it's ethical for me to say, okay, everybody, before we get started, turn your cameras on. I want you to stand up and do a twirl for everybody, because I want to see where you are and what you're doing right now. Because when you think about our lives now, and I look at my children and myself, my clinic now is 100% virtual. I'm wearing shorts right now. I'm not afraid to admit it. I'm not wearing dress slacks. You know, so we don't really have any sort of what we call Zeitgebers or time cues. We just kind of float from one Zoom meeting to the next. And my wife's a teacher, and I heard her, she was running a book club, and she said, my rule is everybody's cameras are on. Because a lot of students log into their environmental science class, turn their cameras off, and go right back to sleep. And my kids have said they're not allowed to require us in the public school to have the camera on because of privacy, which I get. But wow, like all of a sudden you can just sleep through classes where you could never do that if you were sitting in a physical brick and mortar school. So we've really got to figure out, you know, if this pandemic kind of living is going to continue, how to rebuild these unyielding structures in our schedule.
And get some of that structure back. Let's go to Let's go to Carolyn calling in from line one, calling in from Brooklyn on line one. Hi, Carolyn. You're on the air with Dr. Winter.
Hi, how are you? I've always been an early riser, like a 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. person. I wake up, never need an alarm. And post-menopause, so I'm about 58 years old, post-menopause, what I started discovering was I could still go to bed at 10, but I'd start waking up at 3 or 3:30 or 4, and I felt great. And I would just sit there and read and read and read. So are there, in terms of change, this isn't a 2020 question, but in terms of change, is there anything about maybe particularly postmenopausal in women that you find changed patterns of sleep or needing less, which you were just kind of talking about?
Absolutely. And when you look at sleep need over time. From the time we enter into the world as an infant until the time we reach, you know, late, you know, in our 80s and 90s, we are always losing sleep. Meaning that if I meet a 70-year-old who says, I used to sleep 7 hours, but now I feel like I need 9 or 10 to feel my best, that's always a red flag. What should happen, I mean, I wish you were my patient, I have to say, because what she's discovered is that as I've gotten a bit older, and certainly through menopause, there's often big changes in terms of women's sleep need in and around menopause, that she's sort of rolled with it. She's figuring out that 10 to 6 used to work better for me, but suddenly 10 to 5 seems to be more what I'm getting, and I'm enjoying that. So we tell people, spend as much time as you like in bed, as long as it's not frustrating to you. But understand that in and around menopause, the need of sleep you had when you were in your 30s, in your job, running after kids in the house, may not be what you need, say, in your mid-60s. And a lot of individuals struggle because they don't adapt their schedule. They keep trying to make the 8 hours work when their brain is giving them very strong messages every night. No, I only need about 6.5 to 7. If you're interested or you have a computer or a phone with you and you're not driving, you can pull up the American Sleep Association sleep need. And if you do an image search, there's a beautiful chart. Horwitz and others did it. And you can see from the time an individual is born until they're in their geriatric years, look at the range of what we consider to be normal and even acceptable for every age. And in particular, looking at the geriatric population, there are plenty of people who can survive and feel great on small amounts of sleep. So I want you to get the amount of sleep that you need. There is nothing magical about 8 hours. In fact, 8 hours can be very detrimental to somebody who doesn't have the genetic capacity to get it. So every night you are embarking on a fool's errand of trying to get 8 hours of sleep when your body really only wants 6. So I applaud you for really thinking about what you need and evaluating the way you feel during the day. And above everything else she said, which I think is so important, she actually enjoys her time in bed awake. And I think that in a lot of ways is the key to sleep success. Everybody listening to this will go to bed tonight. Some of us will fall right to sleep and wake up with the alarm. Others, it'll take us longer to fall asleep, or we might wake up in the middle of the night and have to go to the bathroom. When you start to embrace and at least, you know, feel relatively neutral about being awake in bed, it's kind of a wonderful experience if you think about it. It really changes the way sleep is experienced by humans. There is a lot of benefit to just simply being in bed, awake, but with your eyes closed and resting, meditating, praying, etc.
My guest, Dr. Christopher Winter. He is a sleep specialist. We'll have more with Dr. Winter after the break. We've got some questions about things like white noise machines, and I want to get the lowdown on weighted blankets in just a minute. This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest is Dr. Christopher Winter. We are talking about sleep. So I have a couple questions for you. Clearly, this is on people's minds that sleeping has been difficult in the past year, and it has caught the attention of people who like to sell us things. So I'm very curious about a couple of things that keep popping up in my Instagram feed. Weighted blankets. Do they help at all, for real?
Yeah, I think they do. So weighted blankets are interesting. They've sort of been a part of the sensory integration, autism spectrum sort of community for a long time, and I think have been a very valuable tool within that realm. But I think that they have a lot broader appeal. And what I always tell my patients, in fact, when we used to be in our clinic, I had a small weighted blanket made that I just keep there. And every now and then, if I'm talking to a patient that I think might like it or benefit from it, I just bring it out and throw it on top of them as we talk. And weighted blankets are interesting. I find that people have very strong opinions. It's almost political in their strength of opinion. And that when you put it on, some people, they love it. And other people really, really don't care for it. So I always ask my patients, when you go to the dentist and you have x-rays done and they put that big lead apron on you, how does that make you feel? I personally love it. And like weighted blankets, some people really don't like that feeling. But if you think about humans and what soothes us, if I see that you're upset, Allison, you've had a difficult interview and I ran into you, I might be bold enough to put my arms around you and apply a gentle pressure, which sounds crazy, but that's what a hug is. And it might
take
make
a hug.
You feel right. Yeah. I cannot tell you how much I miss hugs. Like strangers, I'll take them from anybody at this point. I've been isolated for so long. But anyway, so hugs make us feel better. What do you do with a baby that's crying and you can't console it? You wrap it up like a Chipotle burrito, right? As tight as you can in a little blanket, and it feels better because we tend to respond positively to pressure and touch. And I think weighted blankets tend to kind of work on that principle. I think they're also fantastic for people who struggle with restless leg syndrome. In fact, when you talk to a lot of people who have restless leg, they may be accidentally using weighted blankets. I have patients who say, yeah, I sleep with several blankets folded up on my bed just locked across my legs. And I just saw a reporter posted a question to a message board. What does it mean when a toddler wants to sleep with a lot of blankets on top of it? And I'll bet it's because the toddler has subtle restless leg. So, you know, the nice thing about a weighted blanket is there's no real danger. Give it a shot, you know, sleep with them for a couple nights. I occasionally have restless leg. And on those nights, I just get out of bed, sleep in the guest bedroom, and I grab my weighted blanket. Just make sure you lift with your legs and not your back, because the ergonomics person you were just speaking to, they're pretty difficult to lift and move around if you get heavy ones and big ones. So, you know, the weight is no joke, but you can get them in different sizes. I think they're fantastic. And one of those things, you know, no harm in trying.
Let's go to Gregory on line 8. Hi, Gregory. Thanks for holding. You're on the air with Dr. Winter.
Hi, Allison. Hi, Dr. Winter.
Chris, thanks, Greg.
Thank you. I've been using a white noise machine for many, many years. It's actually an air purifier that can get very loud. And I'm wondering whether there is a too loud for a white noise machine for sleep. And I have a second part of the question. I have light plants in my room, and I use different lights for it. And I've noticed that the purple light helps me to feel a little more rested and get to sleep a little better. I'm wondering if that's safe to use to regulate my sleep, since the plants are controlling my sleep at this point in time.
Okay, let's start with white noise machines. Any danger in white noise machines in terms of, I guess, decibel levels?
I don't think so. I mean, unless you're approaching something that's, you know, somebody would think was really loud. I mean, if it's an air purifier, I don't think there's going to be a problem with that. I mean, there's varying research. I think white noise machines are fine, particularly if you live in a place where the external noise you're being exposed to is hard to regulate. There's traffic noise in New York City. The walls are thin between your apartment and next door. And so having sort of a consistent white noise is a really nice thing. It's probably better than something that's spoken, because your brain doesn't really attend to it, meaning that there was a great study where if you listen to something, words, and you put that person asleep in a PET scanner, they're actually trying to sort the words in their sleep. So I don't think you can learn Spanish in your sleep, but your brain isn't fully letting go when it's trying to decipher language. So if you're using something like watching an episode of Friends before you go to bed, just make sure it's on a timer and cuts off. I think your white noise machine is fine. The light is really interesting. There's a lot of research about light and temperature and how they affect our sleep. What you want to be careful of is sort of colors in that blue-green spectrum, because they can interfere with our body's regulation and suppression of melatonin. So we want to make sure that, you know, lots of blue-green light in the morning, less in the evening. So a lot of people use red lights in the evening, but the purple spectrum would be probably far enough outside that blue-green to not really affect anything negatively. So I think that there's no problem with that whatsoever. And I think it's awesome that you're growing plants. There's all kinds of information that says that particularly men, if they're sleeping in environments that are in touch with nature, they tend to sleep better. So the study that I'm recalling was, if you could look out your window and see green spaces. I like the fact that your caller just decided to bring the green space literally into his bedroom. So good for him.
So what is one thing people are thinking, okay, tonight I'm going to go to sleep and I'm going to try to go to sleep. I'm going to try to get a full night's sleep. Is there one thing you would suggest they do as a first step? We only have about a minute and a half left.
Sure. So I would say that if you're struggling to sleep, and a lot of people come to see us because of efficiency, they're spending a lot of time in bed, not sleeping that much. Maybe one thing you could do is actually go to bed 30 minutes later. Now, that doesn't mean make your wake up time 30 minutes later. Same wake up time, going to bed 30 minutes later. Another thing is bumping the thermostat down a couple degrees. And if you're somebody who likes to have alcohol at night, you know, a little beer, a little wine, earlier in the evening or cutting it out altogether, give that a shot for a week or two and see if that makes any difference in terms of the quality of your sleep.
And if I wake up in the middle of the night and I need to go back to sleep?
You know, I always tell people if you have to wake up in the middle of the night, have a plan. So if you wake up tonight at 2 o'clock in the morning and you can't get back to sleep, what's your plan? So I've got a really good book and I'm working on some other little things. So to me, if I wake up at 2 o'clock, I'm excited to read what's going on in this book that I just picked up. And if I don't, well, that's okay too. So you want to create a situation where you're relatively indifferent to that awakening at night. Don't fear it.
Dr. Chris Winter, you should definitely check out his work. He's a terrific sleep specialist. Hey, Chris, thank you so much for taking calls from our listeners. We really do appreciate it.